so much. In a moment, I will erase what the first speaker of yesterday wrote on the blackboard. And then I will start my talk. No, that's okay. I was joking. It was a bad joke, you know. Okay, thank you. So, the topic is one of, there are a couple of recent extensions of Samaredi theorem, which I met here, by the way, somebody who didn't know what the Samaredi theorem. I was very shocked. So, but it means that I should formulate it precisely so that I will reach to everybody here. So it starts, of course, with van der Waarden, which, of course, all of you know. I will just... So, van der Waarden, 1927. So for any finite partition one of CIs contains arbitrarily long arithmetic progressions. And this was conjectured by Schur, and Schur himself was interested in solving for my equation of a finite field, and it's a long story, but so another talk. So van der Waarden, and by the way, he was helped by Artin and somebody else, and
Schreier.
Who? Schreier. Schreier, right. So they found the proof. There are many other proofs. It's a beautiful theorem. It tells us that the structure, the lattice structure of Z, is undestructible by finite partitions. So you have lattice, you try to kill it by finitely coloring or partitioning finitely many sets, and you will fail, because in one piece of this partition, it will be always equi-spaced configuration. And this is an instance of a beautiful science, which is called Ramsey theory, right? And which has principles. You see, science which has principles, that's something big. So this is an example of implementation of principles of Ramsey theory. So you have well-organized big structure, you finitely partition it, one piece is still highly organized. Okay? And then, of course, the next thing to ask for is why this is so. And there is easy explanation for that. So there is always behind any Ramsey theoretical result, in my opinion, behind Ramsey theoretical result, there is a notion of largeness. And it varies from problem to problem. Moreover, for the same problem, you can find a couple different notions of largeness. But what does mean largeness? It is something like positive measure, positive density, infiniteness, something which is still stable under finite partitions, and which is really responsible for such things to happen. Namely, any large set of integers should be rich on progressions. For any finite partition, one at least piece should be large. That's our, so to say, postulate about notion of largeness. And just look for appropriate notion of largeness. And I know quite a few notions of largeness which are good for van der Waarden, but let's go for the most natural one from maybe elementary point of view, namely notion of positive density, or positive upper density. So, definition, let E is in B in N, and let's define upper, a sort of upper density is called upper Banach density, D star of E by definition is lim sup of E intersection with m plus 1 n over n minus m plus 1, I guess, as n minus m goes to infinity. So in other words, that's a little bit complicated expression because you have two parameters, but the idea is that your set has positive Banach density, it's called upper Banach density. And what it really means, that set has positive upper Banach density if it is large in a sequence of arbitrarily large intervals. Okay, so this is the same as knowing that there exists sequence of intervals such that Bn minus An goes to infinity and E intersection In is bigger than some constant. So that's, if you will, finitized version of this notion. Okay, and then it's clear enough that if you have a set of positive upper Banach density, then for any finite partition of this set, one of the pieces still will be large. So that's our notion of largeness. And then there is theorem of bisimilarity, which is if density of E is positive, then E contains arbitrarily long arithmetic progressions. And we can say that Semmeridis' theorem explains van der Waarden. So any large set in this partition that you started with should be rich on progressions. I call such set AP rich. Okay. Well, and then what else can you do? So you may start in be interesting in other configurations. So Semmeridis' theorem, if it, we see it as extension of van der Waarden, is a sort of geometrical thing. It's about lattice structure, but we have also arithmetic structure in integers. And we can not only add but multiply things. And maybe there is something polynomial always sitting in any set of positive density. And the hint is given by theorem of Sarkozy, now I'm not sure, is it like this? Just like this and like this, like this. Thank you. So Sarkozy proved the following beautiful fact, so that if E is in N, density of E positive, then there exists X, Y in E such that X minus Y equal perfect square. So there exists N. And that's amazing theory. Because if your set is large, there is no reason for its distances to hit small sets. And squares is a small set. And there is, of course, something special about squares. But there are many other funny sets for which it is true. And again, I'm sorry, some people here know those things well, but maybe some others don't. So n squared minus 1 is also for another n. Or indeed any polynomial with zero constant term. Or any, or prime minus 1. Or prime plus 1. But no other shift of primes. And no, nothing bad as this, because you can show that anything which is lacunary is not good for Sarkozy type theory. So there is still, in a way, some mystery. We have plenty of sufficient conditions. Rule of thumb is if you have a sequence which has the property that An alpha mod 1 is uniformly distributed, and if An has divisibility properties, then it's good for Sarkozy. So squares is such a sequence, primes minus 1. You see, primes are good for that, but they're not terribly divisible, right? But primes minus 1 are very divisible, and that's why. Okay, so there are good reasons for equidistributed sequences of this kind to be good for Sharkozy theorem if you know how, if you know the elements of the proof, and then you can push the proof in this direction. But there are some other funny sequences which do not come from uniform distribution and which are still good for Sharkozy. And I will give you an example. So you take a set E of the form finite sums of some infinite sequence. So any element of E looks like an so for any finite set of integers, please pay attention, this alpha and this alpha are from different hierarchies. So let it be here X, okay? And it is convenient to denote finite subset of integers. I said one, joke, finite, okay? So you take subset of integers which are finite, there is a reason to denote them by small letters, because any element of the set will look like n sub alpha. So suppose your alpha is n1 nk. Then you can start indexing elements of the set by alphas, and you can write, you can just sum up those elements in the sequence whose indices belong to the set. So, okay. Now it's not hard to show that such sets are good for Sharkozy. So for any set of positive density, the set of differences will contain an element of this form for any sequence of finite sums. Such sets, by the way, are called in ergodic theory, and for a reason, IP sets. But what is not obvious at all, and which is still true, is that E minus E, and E is like here, always contains a square from any given in advance IP set. And this now doesn't follow from Chisaro averages. You see, uniform distribution is a notion based on averaging. Those things are not really averageable in general. And if there is a reason for Sharkozy theorem to hold with such interesting creatures, then there is something else. Okay, and now I will maybe kill half of you. I will tell you that this something else which is behind so refined Sharkozy theorem is ultrafilters. And you know, in France it may still go well, but in North America... So I will have to say a few words about ultrafilters just for us to make propaganda for ultrafilters. But I want to formulate an extension of Semeredi, which in its formulation doesn't use any ultrafilters. Ultrafilters come as a method rather than part of the statement. So maybe this will motivate people to be kind to ultrafilters, okay? So before I go on with the topic of this talk, I want to formulate what is natural now to assume. So if we do know that, let me formulate it again here, that... So I hope the quantifiers are clear. For any set of positive density E, and for any polynomial, say, with zero constant term, there exists N such that P of 0 is not 0. P of N is not 0, of course, but this P of N is part of the difference. So the set of differences always hits the values of any given in advance polynomial. And now I hope we agree that there is now a natural thing to do to attempt to crossbreed between Sharkozy and Semeredi theorems. So Semeredi tells you that there are jumps which go along arithmetic progression. Sharkozy tells you that there is at least single jump along any given in advance polynomial. So why not to attempt to see, suppose now I'm given a bunch of polynomials. Suppose for convenience now that they all take 0 at 0. So maybe my set E contains something of this type, where all these gaps are given by, so up to here it is Sarkozy. But maybe I can be lucky enough to arrange for these jumps to be values of all these polynomials simultaneously for the same n. If your polynomials are linear, you get Semiradi. If you have k equal 1, you get Sarkozy. If you take single polynomial and all of its multiples, you get a refinement of polynomial refinement of Semiradi, which is not too general, but already interesting. Or you can take n and square and cube and so on, and then you get a shift of geometric progression in your set. So anything of polynomial nature. And this is true. So, I don't know how to formulate, maybe here. So polynomial Semiradi theorem, and this is joint result with Sasha Leibman, says exactly that. So for any E of positive density and for any PI E contains many configurations of the form A plus P1 of n, A plus P2 of n, A plus PK of n. So like here, of course, you start somewhere, so that's my A. Any questions so far? Sorry? Well, since I said that E contains this set, so A is in E too. Ah, no. Yes, A is in E. It contains, maybe I should better say, I don't know, A plus P1 of n, A plus P2 of n, A plus PK of n. Okay? And when I say many, so that's an interesting issue on its own. What does it mean, many? Another question there? Question? That's all the same. If you are happier with this, I will write it this way. That's good. Call these polynomials PK tilde. But yeah, but maybe there is, I actually like this thing even more, you know. Why? Because it has a sort of a structure of finite sum sets. And it hints maybe that there are extra connections. In any case, that's equivalent. Now many. What does it mean many? I said many here. And that's interesting. So I may not give justice to this today, but to find out how large and in which senses the set of indices n is here is very interesting already on level of Sarkozy. For example, this result shows to you that the set of differences of any set of positive density intersects non-trivially squares along any IP set. We call such property IP star. Having this property is a filter property. So it follows from this, but it can be achieved other ways too, that in principle E minus E intersection E1 minus E1 intersection E2 minus E2 always contains again something like this. So I, as you see, I'm already generalizing. I can write different polynomials. I can take one IP set and get cubes along it. I can take another IP set based on sequence Ki and can squares along it. And I can take a couple different sets and can intersect them, and they all still will contain such creatures. So there is something going on here. In any case, it turns out that it's quite non-trivial to show that this N in this Semeradi result can be always chosen to be of the form N alpha for any finite sums of Ni. So you remember, N alpha denotes an element of such a set, and such set is arbitrary now, and can you always find an alpha from such a set to be here? For applications, it's actually good because of this filter property that I was hinting. And it's possible to do. But that's already joint result with Randall-McCutcheon, which is not using Cesaro averages. That's, I keep hinting that there is one more method, method of using different notions of convergence, method based on ultrafilters, which is responsible for such things. And I will say even more about this, but first I want to formulate, let's see. So, maybe I can erase here for now. And also, one more remark. I just want to make this talk somewhat friendlier, so I deal only with one-dimensional thing. But in principle, Semeradi itself has multi-dimensional version due to Furstenberg-Katznelson, and our original result with Leibmann is also multi-dimensional polynomial Semeradi. Multi-dimensional polynomial Semeradi still has no non-ergodic proof. IP Semeradi has no non-ergodic proof. So there are still some methods from ergodic theory to which I will be moving now, which are still very strong, and maybe they show some direction. So in any case, let me formulate first of all Furstenberg's ergodic Semeradi theorem. And it says that for any measure-preserving system, and this is a probability space, and T is preserving measure, which means that for any, so this is a probability space, namely A space, A sigma algebra, and measure, we always will assume that measure of the whole set is 1, so it's a bounded system, so to say. T will be always ergodic if needed. T will be always invertible if needed. So that's why I write this minus 1 only because of tradition in ergodic theory to be careful. So if T is invertible, I could write T instead of T minus 1. And then for any such system, and for any A which has positive measure, and for any K in N, there exists N, so that mu of A TNA, TKNA is positive. Now, let me write minus here, it really doesn't matter. And let's compare it with such a statement. Density of E intersection E minus N intersection E minus KN is positive. I hope you agree that these are very similar statements. I hope you agree that this one is just Semeradi theorem. Right, because if this set is non-trivial, positive density promises that it's non-trivial. Take any element in this set. That this element will be there, and this element plus n will be there, and this element plus 2n will be there. That's progression. So, not E, no, no, no. No, no, no. E is my set of positive density.
Okay, so the second set.
Ah, good point. C. Yeah, so C is supplying parameters. And E is, and we'll stick to this, for in dynamical system I will write A for large set, and in my set of positive density let it be E. Thank you. So that's why now we know what is E here. So I hope you agree that these are very similar statements, and for a reason. So there is a thing which is called Fürstenberg correspondence principle, which tells you that if you know to get all kinds of non-trivial intersections in your dynamical system along your action, be it finite, be it a single operation or some action of a minable group or whatever, then there is a result in combinatorics which corresponds to that. So here is convenient for us version of Fürstenberg correspondence principle, and Tammy is giving a talk too. She will repeat it. So Fürstenberg correspondence principle. And so for any E of positive density, there exists measure preserving system, and there exists A in B with mu of A equal D star of E, such that for any numbers, and one in K, mu, now which way I want it, maybe D star of E intersection E minus N1, E minus N2, E minus NK, bigger or equal than mu of A, TN1A, TNKA. So if you know to show this, pay attention, by the way, language is ergodic. It's not necessarily ergodic statement because we don't assume anything of my dynamical system. Any dynamical system, any set A of positive measure, any K, it's something formulated in ergodic language, but it's still as combinatorial. Just ergodic language allows you to use ergodic apparatus, and that's a good thing. So now, so if I would know to do things along polynomials, I will get something polynomial here and so on. And that's why we know that such things are true, and from now on, I maybe will be formulating theorems in sometimes in ergodic fashion. So next step, yes, please. Yes. Yes. And since you asked, so here is an interesting theorem which I once invented for different purposes, but from it will follow, and it can be done in many other ways. But I want to sell this good lemma to you. Okay, so here is the theorem. So let x be mu be a probability space. Let a n be set. Oh. Let AN be sets of measure bounded from below. So you have a bunch of sets, and the only thing you know about them that they have measure bounded from below by the same constant. Then there exists sequence NK going to infinity. Density, actually in this case it's a regular density, or upper density, but I will still write this because it's good enough, okay? Of this sequence, bigger equal than A, such that A and measure of AN1, AN2, ANK is positive for all K. And now apply this lemma to very special sets. And so along some sequence of powers, you will get, so this will become TN1A, TNKA. And now assume that you know some already here. So you will find it you will find progressions in the powers of my t. You cancel out and all that, and you get back this. But in principle, you can do it easy. You don't have to work that hard. I just think this is a neat lemma, and it's useful for many other things. But that's an indication that these are not equivalent because they're correct, and any logician will say, of course, they're equivalent. No, you can get each from other in finitely many pages. Okay? Okay. By the way, when should I stop? Okay. So now, the topic of today's talk. So if you know that similarity is true along polynomials, you should ask, well, along what other interesting configurations it's true? And there are some candidates. So one type of candidates, so rule of thumb should be this. If you have a regular function or family of regular functions, say growing not too fast, and whose differences are maybe not constants and things like this, then maybe similarity-like result is true. And that, I believe, it is so, but since I didn't tell you what regular means, it will take still a long time to prove it in satisfactory form, but so-called Hardy fields is us applying material for that, and there will be a talk here by Nikos Frantzikinakis. So one instance, so they don't get it along different elements of Hardy fields, but you can get multiples of the same function, which will be good, like taking n squared, 2n squared, 3n squared, but instead of n squared, a function from a Hardy field. And that's very, very interesting recent result by Frantzikinakis and Virgil. Now, on the other hand, there is another very natural family of things to consider. After all, why should our polynomials be with integer coefficients? So let's take polynomials, any polynomials, and take bracket function. So isn't it natural to maybe think that if my functions, so how about expressions of this kind? So take some polynomials in R, and then consider expressions. This time I'm writing it ergodically, but I hope you agree that that's all the same. And now consider such things. Shouldn't you expect, or isn't it natural to ask at least, if such a thing also will give you positive intersection for many n's? After all, if you look for regular family of functions, surely polynomials, you break them to become integers, should be a candidate. Well, of course, it's one thing to conjecture, it's another thing to prove. But for some simple polynomials, you can do it by bare hands. If you take, for example, I don't know, alpha n squared, I can show to you easily why this should be expected to be good for, at least for Sharpe's theorem. After all, for many n's, we know that alpha n squared mod 1 is equidistributed, right? So you can get it for arbitrarily small epsilon, you can find n and k so that you will have this equality. And then if you multiply n, so instead of this, you consider now a alpha times 2n square, you will get maybe 4k plus epsilon 2, which is multiple of this epsilon, and so on. And you see that you start creating a string of things which look like those which belong to polynomial similarity theorem. And if on top of it you use a convenient so-called uniformity, which always is there in such theorems. So you really need not similarity, but finitistic version of it, which tells you that you have to take only that many n's along a polynomial to hit good intersection, and then it will work for you. And we call this method of arithmetic progressions, and give me any well-defined polynomial, I will bring it to similarity maybe, at least if my polynomial is not too crazy. Now, among such polynomials, nothing is too crazy. They are nice, eventually monotone functions, and there are all the reason to expect that things are nice. But if I go to so-called generalized polynomials, what can I write? Maybe here. So anything which looks like, I don't know, n squared alpha beta, or maybe n alpha n beta minus n alpha beta, like this. So n alpha plus 1 minus n alpha minus alpha. These are examples of generalized polynomials. And I hope it's clear what does it mean, generalized polynomial. Anything that you can create by adding one more operation, bracket. So these are very special cases of generalized polynomials. You just took one bracket and you took nice polynomials. But those, I intentionally gave you these two examples for you to get a feeling that these are crazy creatures. For example, this one takes only two values, 0 and 1. This one oscillates. I easily can create polynomials which will grow, I'll just multiply here by n square. Oh, no, here. So it will grow on a set of positive density, will be 0 on another set of positive density. So they're very sophisticated creatures. It's very hard to believe that you can do anything good with them. It's even not clear a priori if they have any distribution, so to say. That's why it comes as a pleasant surprise that that they actually have regular properties. So what we proved recently with Sasha Leibman is this. So, for example, for any, so I hope I define generalized polynomial, anything which can be created by regular arithmetic plus bracket. And so theorem is this. That's one of many things that you did with Sasha Leibman in our big paper. So for any unitary operator on a Hilbert space, any and any generalized polynomial, say G of n, lim 1 over n minus m u to power g of n, and any integer valued. But the way I define them, they're all integer valued, right? So the nice polynomial, this exists. Now, that tells you, you see, I don't tell you what is the limit. Who knows what is the limit? But the fact that limit exists uniformly has already interesting corollaries, or at least results of this type. It means that on the set of bounded generalized polynomials, you can always think that you take fractional part at the end. After all, fractional part is expressible through integer part, right? So you can think that fractional part is also part of the business. And take any polynomial, take fractional part at the end, it becomes bounded. Any bounded generalized polynomial, so you take now algebra of bounded generalized polynomials. That's huge algebra. But from results of this kind, it follows that there exists a unique invariant mean on this algebra. So maybe they're not so bad. Now, here's another result, which shows to you that generalized polynomials actually are even closer to familiar things. So any almost periodic function or sequence A of n has representation f of, so a of n equals f of t n x, where f is continuous function on some compact space and t is homeo. So sorry, I don't define what is almost periodic because I'm at the end of my talk, but some people do know what is almost periodic. So this theorem tells you that almost periodic functions, you know, anything like sine alpha or sine x plus cosine square root of 2x, okay? Any almost periodic function is representable dynamically. There is always a rotation. It's not just homeo. This is actually a rotation on a compact abelian group. And any almost periodic function comes dynamically by picking a convenient rotation, picking a point, picking a continuous function, and reading off. So turns out that any bounded generalized polynomial is of the form g of n equals f of tn x0. And this time, of course, that's heavier theorem, as you can imagine. That's why, what is f, what is t? So f is almost continuous. If I would tell you on which space it is, then I could say piecewise polynomial. But almost continuous, you always can think about Riemann integrable, okay? Now t, and that's most interesting, is a translation on a nil manifold. So this is a non-commutative brother of rotation on compact abelian groups, but it's much more sophisticated brother. And so nil manifold is factor space of nilpotent Lie group over co-compact lattice, but, and you can translate now, cosets, but it turns out that any polynomial gets this way, which by the way explains many things. And after this, then you start thinking, okay, so maybe there is a Semeradi theorem too. And what we proved with Randall McCutcheon just recently is the following result. And there is one more thing. You remember in my formulation of theorem together with Sasha Leibman, I assumed that polynomials at zero are zero. But for generalized polynomials, it's not clear what is constant term. So we should be ready in advance to remove a constant for my polynomial if need be. And by the way, this applies also to regular polynomials. I take a polynomial, I don't know, n squared plus 1. You can show it's not good. But you remove a constant, it becomes good, okay? So we should be nice enough to allow removal of constants from any regular functions if that's what helps to get Semeradi theorem. And this applies already to regular polynomials. That's why it's not too much of assumption at all. So here is a theorem. For any, so theorem, so it's Randall McCutcheon and myself, and it says this, for any generalized polynomials, gi of n, for any E with positive density, there are constants Li such that E intersection E minus G1 of N minus L1 intersection E minus GK of N minus LK is positive, or at least is non-empty, and moreover, for many, that's important, n. And so now I'm done with my time, but I want to make one comment. So any questions about the formulation? Yes, please. Yes, if I will explain to you why, from where Li's are coming. So now that's why I want to make a comment. What is the method here? I showed to you that they're crazy enough for you not to expect that any Cesaro method will work. But there exists something which I managed not to explain. There are so-called idempotent ultrafilters, which are members of beta n stone chair compactification along which you can take limits. Now, you don't take limits along any such ultrafilter because then mathematics become hard. You take only fat. I call them fat ultrafilters. Sometimes they're called minimal. There are families of them even. Those ultrafilters which have the property that every member of them has positive upper Banach density. There are plenty of them and they're natural. If you take them only for convergence, you still have, you have the best of all the worlds. First of all, their members are fat. That's why you get many n's. Because they are fat, you also can deal easily with, for those who know, with weak mixing rather than some other mixing properties. Weak mixing likes positive density. It also means that you can replace relatively conveniently Cesaro averages. Because you use ultrafilters, then you can sort of a polynomialize, and that's the secret. If you take generalized polynomials, they're not polynomials. But along ultrafilters, they are sort of polynomials in some asymptotic way. That's why, not that you can reduce it to Semeradi theorem, but you can use all kinds of techniques. Additional thing is that you don't get polynomials of regular nature, but you get so-called IP polynomials. This is huge class. The real theorem should be for them, and we have, this is just an example of what we have much more general results. They will be maybe not easy to formulate right away. And now about constants. If I take ultra filter in advance, you see my generalized polynomials are crazy. Sometimes they're zero. If I want to get something from them, I rather take ultra filters which are good for them. For each ultra filter and ultra filter, it will be another maybe constant, but what is true that there are only finitely many constants to take out. Because, and I will explain this too, generalized polynomials have only finitely many brackets. That's the reason. So there is a set of constants which you know you can remove to get somewhere ready, and sometimes you can even handle it. But since we look for very general formulation, then I cannot add. Give me any concrete polynomial, I will show to you which constants to take out. And there are classes of polynomials, and that's another interesting thing. There are polynomials for which you don't have to take constants out. These are analogs of polynomials with zero constant terms. What these are? Think this way. Take all kinds of polynomials with zero constant term and take bracketed expressions with them any way you want, but your brackets now are not real brackets, but distances to closest integer, or closest integer bracket, which is the same thing. For those, you don't need to remove constants. That's an example. I think I'm done.